Welcome to the Politics of Everything. I'm Amber Danes, your host and podcast producer. This is a half hour of power, a podcast dropping every week where I unpack the politics of everything, from money to motherhood, nutrition to narcissism, startups to secularism, the environment, quality, and much, much more. Our guests are seasoned in the field or topic of their choice, even if you've not heard of them yet. This is a non-partisan show. So while I love exploring varied views and get a buzz from a healthy debate of ideas, this is not a purely blue, white, green program. Please subscribe, tune in, and enjoy the politics of everything. Obu Ramaraj is the CEO of Smart Money Solutions, money management expert, a speaker and author of two books, Smart Women, Smart Home Loans and What Your Lenders Won't Tell You is a guide, and Smart Women, Smart Habits, Powerful Practices to Create Your Ideal Financial Future. Her experience is quite unique in that she's a first generation Australian Indian and has worked as a research scientist in her previous life. She built a successful business from the ground up in finance while raising two young kids and acting as a chief financial officer at home. Obu is also a certified MBIT, and that stands for Multiple Brain Integration Technique Coach. And we're going to chat a little bit more about that in this show. Obu has not been nominated for various awards and is an active community volunteer. Her mission is to help women take control of their financial lives. When women transform their relationship with money, she says they transform their relationship with life. And after spending over a decade in the financial industry, Obu knows what is most important to plan and achieve the desired lifestyle for women. And it's just not about making more and more money, which is good to hear. I warmly welcome Obu to the Politics of Everything.
Thank you for having me, Amber. It's a pleasure to be here.
Podcasting remotely can be challenging, but it doesn't have to be. Since day one of the Politics of Everything, I have relied on Zencastr's all-in-one solution to make the process quick and painless, the way it should be for those of us who just love great content and want to get our ideas out into the world. If you know me, I'm obsessed with quality in terms of my guests, my sound, and everything about my show has to be great the first time. I'm time poor. It's so easy to use Zencastr. I'm not tech savvy, and you don't need to be either. There's nothing to download. Just click on the link and off we go. Zencastr is all about making your podcasting experience easy, and with everything from local recording to automated post-productions now in their toolkit, you don't have to leave your browser to get that episode done and done fast. I have a special offer for you, and I hopefully you can experience what I have with Zencastr. Go to zencastr.com/pricing and use my VIP code, the politics of everything, all lowercase and one word, to get 30% off your first 3 months of Zencastr Professional. How good is that? I want you to have the same easy experience as I do for all my podcasting and content needs. It's time to share your story.
Yeah, it's a great opportunity to chat to you and pick your brain about these sorts of things. And I did note, obviously, in the bio that before you've worked in this financial space, you've been a research scientist. Is that what you thought you'd be as a kid? Is that kind of what floated your boat? And I guess your early career journey is a result of that. Do you remember what you thought you might do when you were back at school?
Back at school, where I grew up, culturally, to be honest, I never thought I was going to work because my family is wealthy. My father was a businessman. And in those days, you know, some of my friends were really wealthy. They got married just even before they finished school. So for a long time, my sister and I, we thought we were never going to work. And funny enough, both of us are working now. But I think back then, my mom, she used to always tell us, you know, whatever you do, do it well. So she was sort of our inspiration and pushing us to be the very best in whatever we do. So, you know, we did all the usual things, study well at school, you know, do extracurricular activities and things like that. And for me personally, again, being honest, I did not want to be married just after school. So that prompted me to put a lot of effort into my studies and be the very best. So, but I remember at one point in time, maybe in high school, I got interested with heart and the brain. For some reason, those two organs, maybe I was studying about organs in a biology class and I sort of thought, wow, if the heart stops, you know, life stops. Similarly with the brain, if anything happens, then you know, sort of life comes to a stop. So I was very interested in those two organs. And I clearly remember, I think in year 11, they took us to on a trip to a hospital just so, you know, a few of the science students get a feel for what being a doctor is like. And to this day, my friend and I laugh about this because when they took us there, they had us look at a corpse. And I'm like, never, never am I going to be a doctor. So somewhere I knew I wanted to do something with science, but nothing concrete when I was that young.
Yeah, I love that. I love to hear what people are, I guess what makes you tick as well, isn't it? Because I think some of those things carry on, that curiosity throughout your life, even if you do change careers. To dive into our topic today, what do you think is the biggest myth around money and mindset? And, you know, we talk about things like self-limiting beliefs, but I often think it's more than that that kind of holds a lot of people back or makes people feel a certain way when we talk about money.
So if I go back to when I grew up or where I grew up, you know, money was not a topic at all. But then we learned a few things from my parents, things like, you know, you need to save a portion of what you earn, don't go into debt, and lots of things like that. So that sort of put me on a good note. So when I first came here to Australia, I had no experience working. I had no experience managing money. So, you know, mine is an arranged marriage. So when I landed in Australia, thrown straight into the deep end, and I had to figure out how things were done. It was just my partner earning. And you can imagine, yeah, I only met my partner a month before my wedding. So it was like two different people thrown together. And literally, we are two different people in a lot of ways. So I had to really work that out. So for me, I think at that time, when it came to mindset, which I did not realize at that time, yeah. So over the years, I have understood what created or what made me behave in a certain way. But I think the biggest myth is that a lot of people believe that money alone will automatically bring happiness and fulfillment. So I think along those lines, when you are thinking, it becomes very hard to focus on anything about life.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I think it often feels like a privileged position to go, well, don't worry about money. But if you're in a situation where you live in poverty or you've come from a background where, you know, there's been financial challenges, often that sets you up for how you relate to money. Would you agree with that?
My story is a little bit different. So let me share that. So, you know how I said I came from a wealthy family. Yeah. So back in India, I did not have to think about money at all. Like, you know, if I needed something, which I did not need much. And I think that's a part of my upbringing. But if I needed anything, I just had to ask my parents and they would get it for me. So that's how I lived back in India. When I came to Australia after my marriage, being on one income, I had to forego a lot of things. Even to go out and have dinner, you know, I really had to make sure that we were not living on debt or a credit card. So that one thing I was super clear about. And after many years, you know, even a decade, I should say, after I arrived here, analyzing back to those initial years, I realized I had gone into poverty mindset without even my knowledge. Because I was brought up in affluence, I did not know what it meant. I thought everything was going to be fine. But, you know, of course, life happens and things always don't go as per plan. And I did not want to reach out to my parents to say I needed, you know, that was not how I was brought up again. So I tried to do with what I had. And then I went into poverty mentality. And then after many years, I had to get out of it. And I had to do a lot of work on myself. So it can work either way. You know, you come from a deprived background and you really want to get out of it. Or it could be in my situation, affluence to poverty, back to affluence.
Yes, I love that. And I think we only learn by experience is how I see it. So we can talk in theory about all the things you've just talked about, but I think when you go through it, you obviously have to work that out for yourself. I am curious to ask you about what does a certified multiple brain integration technique coach do, and how does it help the people that you work with and yourself?
You know how I spoke about I was interested in heart and brain when I was at school? It's funny to think that it's come a whole circle. And with MBIT, the multiple brain integration, the concept there is that we all have three brains. Of course, we know about the brain, which is the evolved version of thinking And if you think about our gut, you know, a lot of people use their gut, yeah, you say a gut reaction. So in Embed, they say the gut is the primitive brain, which has sort of neurons as well. And it's very fascinating to think about it that way. And then there's your heart, which also has neurons and thinking capacity. You know, some people make decisions with their hearts. So that's the concept with Embed, to use all of these three sort of thinking organs to make decisions that will really help to make sure that your decisions are, you use your intuition and that is aligned with what you want to get things done. So with my Embed side of things that I coach, or when I use that, it's sort of sitting down like for a meditation, especially with some things, you know, you feel like you're stuck, you want something done. So, you know, those things are you sit there and then you make use of the three organs to sort of, I guess, in a way, it may sound like woo-woo, but, you know, it's about asking those three organs for help with some of the decisions that you want to make. And you'll be surprised sometimes, you know, your gut might say one thing and your brain might say another thing. So
I was going to say, what if they don't all line up? Yeah, how do you work through that?
Of course, I was a head person. I used to live in my head. Even when I did my Embed coaching, I still remember people used to tell, oh, you're living in your head. Different people are different. Yeah. You know, like some people, they make decisions with their heart and they're like, oh, I feel I need this purse. I need to buy it.
Yeah. I mean, with money, that can be a bit tricky if you don't have it, right? And you feel like you need to have everything. But yeah, I think it's almost a bit of a retraining, I imagine, in some ways.
Yeah, that's right. So that's the thing with Embed, and it's just working out which one of it is your predominant mode of thinking and then retraining all the three to work for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I love that explanation. I think that's a bit clearer for everyone who may not be familiar with it, including myself. Are there some easy ways we can improve how we view money? Any sort of, I guess, tips or ideas that, you know, the audience might go, oh, I can actually start doing that today?
One thing, or one big lesson that my parents taught us, me and my sister, is to really know what you want in life. So to know your values and your priorities, because, you know, we live in a world, a consumer world, where everybody wants everything instantaneously as well. So for me, what has worked is to be clear on what my priorities are when it comes to money. And it's so easy to get into the trap of comparison. Yeah. So it's super easy that you look at your friend or a colleague and say, oh, I want that life too. So once you define your values and priorities, you know how you can use money in your favor. And I was reading Tony Robbins' book. I'm not sure if you heard of it, called Money, Master the Game.
Yes, I have.
Yeah. And he sort of mentions this as well. You know, once you work out what your priorities are, it really becomes easy to know how much money you need to live, even a luxurious life. And sometimes people are surprised that you don't actually need $1 million to live your dream life. The number is much less than what they have in their mind. So working this out is going to help people to understand what that number is for them. And I'm telling you, most people will be surprised that that number is super low and they can still live a beautiful life.
Yes, absolutely. And I think that's a great way for people to perhaps perceive that as you know, they're thinking about their relationship with money and how that's going to navigate and dictate in sometimes their life. Financial planning, of course, is a business. It's something that people pay for and they get advice to make decisions or help sort of plan for the future. Is that something everyone should, if they can afford it, or should prioritize in some way? Or is there a way we can become financially savvy? Not everyone's going to sit down and read 100 books. I do know that. So Are there some ways in which we can educate ourselves is really the question.
Yeah. So I've had a financial planner for myself. A good financial planner can make a big difference. And the reason I put it that way is because sometimes we don't know about a lot of things. For example, when I went to a financial planner, I did not know about wills. I thought, who thinks about wills when you are even in your 30s, yeah?
Exactly.
But it was super important because we did not have any family and we still don't have any family here, yeah? So things about wills, what happens to your children should anything happen to the both of us, you know, who's going to take care of them? So there's small things like that, which I wouldn't have known if I had not spoken to a financial planner. And maybe some people are savvy, they know about this, but they still don't get it done. So with a financial planner, I only did it once. We had a really good look of everything, had a chat with them about our financial aspirations and things like that, which put us on a good path. And, you know, I reviewed our insurances, personal insurances, if that's enough and things like that. But after that, literally what I did was to make sure that I was on top of things. One of the biggest things as even in my work, line of work, is for people to know their numbers, aka budget. A lot of people don't want to talk about it, think about it, but it's one of the biggest things that once you know that, then you really know what else you can do with your money, how you want to plan for your future and things like that. So if people have not worked it out, I just want to point out that insurance, personal insurance, is one of the most important things they need to have in their life.
And when you say personal insurance, just to break that down, are we talking things like, you know, for trauma, for income protection? Like what are the pillars, I guess, within that insurance wheel?
So I think it's life insurance, then you have your trauma insurance, then you have your TPD, which is total and permanent disability.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the main things, because I even see in my line of work in mortgages with clients, people who have had that and have met with accidents are recovering better, quicker access to medical facilities and things. Whereas when people don't have that, they sort of struggle and they are reaching out to the community for support, which, you know, the community does help. But I always say that insurance is for when you don't need it. So it's one of those things, if you have it, I sort of think it's like, you know, Murphy's Law, that it's not going to happen. So if you don't have that, it's super important to sort that out, either within your superannuation or outside. So depending on, you know, your income and how much you can afford and things like that. If you have that, that's going to save you in the future should anything happen. The second thing, as I mentioned, is wills. So if you haven't thought about it, regardless of how young you are, if you especially are married and have a family, then it's super important to think about that. So, and the other thing is also, you know, your everyday bills. Yeah. So how do you take care of it? Do you review it regularly? So all those things, I think if you can do it for yourself, then financial planning, literally, investments, one thing that people struggle with, you know, when it comes to properties, I think they are okay, but anything else, a little bit of knowledge or doing a course, that's really going to help understand and DIY.
Yeah, I think the challenge is, and it's sort of come up over the years in other conversations I've had around this topic of financial planning and money and estate planning and all those things, is it feels like sometimes it's a bit of a secret club. If you've grown up with parents who talk about money, which I didn't either, I learned nothing. I had to learn it all the hard way and work it out. And you're not open about that, then it just becomes all very opaque. And I think people don't really know where to start. You know, property feels like really obvious. But look, I've had investment properties that haven't made money. It's not been great, because I just, you know, was following, I guess, someone's advice or a tip or someone else's experience. And it's a hard lesson to learn, really.
But I guess, like you mentioned, when you learn it yourself, that sort of solidifies that lesson for you. And I guess being willing to review it and move on, that's very important. But as you mentioned, I did not have parents, you know, here. I don't have anybody who could advise me. It was by pure luck that I stumbled across this really good financial planner when I moved suburbs, and then started talking to her more from, sending clients mutually. But then I ended up working with her to understand all these things. And in my line of work, I talk to a lot of my clients about this, but not everybody is willing to take action.
I think that's the hard thing. It's that over-education piece where it's like, well, that's only as good as, you know, you're actually putting that into practice as well. And, you know, I think there's a hesitancy. And look, even on the property thing, I do think people are too obsessed with it in Australia.
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I've done some like stuff with our financial plan. I'm a middle of the row investor in terms of risk profile. I don't like high risk, but I don't need it to be, as they say, safe as houses, because I just think it's like putting all your eggs in one basket. You know, having 10 investment properties just does not do it for me, because I just can see the limitation of that. But I was a financial journalist as well, so I do feel like I learned a lot through that job, because I could ask people the tough questions, right? So it is one of those things which it's a hard one for people to get their head around, I think, unless they have the experience.
I guess people go for properties because, you know, you don't need specialist advice like what we were talking about. You don't need a financial planner. You just do something, and then if you buy in the right location at the right time, I guess somehow you end up making some money.
But yeah. It's not, you know, it's not highly liquid. It depreciates in value and sometimes because you need to maintain it. We've had tenants from hell before as well, which is, you know, all the things that, I mean, it sounds terrible and I love people, don't get me wrong. That's why I do a podcast. Sometimes I go, any financial thing that doesn't have to have people in it, I'll do that one. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah.
That's the thing. Changing tack a little bit, what would be your, at the moment anyway, your number one business tool or hack that can't be your smartphone, and how's it helping you?
I sort of am a spiritual person, so I'm going to go back to that. So for me, I guess it's all about how I start my day. I've had times when, you know, I wake up straight onto my phone and then that day doesn't turn out well. So I've sort of created a ritual for me, you know, wake up with gratitude, move my body a little bit, do my prayers and things like that, which really sets me up for the
whole day. Do you wake up early? Do you mind me asking? Are you an early bird or are you just a sort of, you know, standard get up at 7 o'clock kind of person?
I listen to my body. I don't use an alarm to wake up unless I have to be somewhere, which is sort of only my yoga class on a Saturday morning at 7 a.m. So I really don't use an alarm. I listen to my body. Sometimes I naturally wake up at 6, sometimes at 7, but, you know, as I get older, I don't do the 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock waking up anymore.
Yes, it happens, doesn't it? I literally say I cannot sleep in.
Yeah. But I don't do late nights anymore as well. I'd rather, you know, keep my body in top shape. And I think, yeah, the latest is probably 10 or 11 if I'm having a weekend night out with somebody. So I think that's the most important thing for my life and for my business. But other than that, I think if you talk about work, I need my desk to be clean. Otherwise, my brain gets cluttered.
Oh, that's good to know. I love hearing those sorts of things. And yes, it does. I feel like that about my house. But then I wonder if I do it sometimes as a procrastination tool.
That can happen.
I will vacuum because I don't want to do my taxes today.
Yeah, that's true. And coming to that, I do have a list as well, you know, a priority task list for every day. Mm-hmm. And I don't try to put too many things on that because then you're going to get overwhelmed. So even if it's one thing, perhaps, like you said, you don't want to do your tax. So that could be your only thing for that day. So unless you do that, you're not allowed to do anything sort of thing also helps me.
Yeah, a bit of reward for when you do the things. You know, there's a saying they have, it's I think it's an English saying originally, but it's like eat the frog, do the thing you don't want to do first.
Yeah.
And I used to be better at that, but I think, as you get older, you kind of pick and choose. Yeah. Your biggest life lesson to date and why has that been important to you?
When I look back at my younger self, like when I was at uni, I had no clue. You know, the future looked daunting. I was so confused. I didn't know where I was going to work, if I was going to work and things like that. And then, you know, let's say I'm in 2016. When I look back 10 years back to 2006, again, first arrived in Australia, I had no clue. And I have to say that every decade has been better than the last 10 years.
I love that though, don't you? Like, is that just, do you think that's reality or perspective? I just don't know. As we get older, we kind of calm down a little bit, if that makes sense, you know?
I used to be a big worry pot.
Me
that
too.
Used to be my nature.
Type A personality, they used to call me. And exactly. Now people wouldn't even know that about me because I'm like you. I feel more centered and I feel more sure of myself. I don't know. I think it comes with age.
I think so as well. So reaching out, getting into your spiritual practice or whatever practice serves you, I think that has made me realize that not to take life too seriously because we are all going to go at some point in time. Yeah. So just to have that balance. And I've always been a big advocate of doing everything that your heart wishes for. So when I say that, you know, it's not just life's not just about work. Spend time with family, pursue a hobby, not when you're 50 or 60, but even in your 30s and your 40s. So that sort of helps you. I think that's sort of my biggest life lesson, not to worry too much about the future.
Yeah, absolutely. Because you can't control everything. I think that was my big aha moment, you know, where you try and think if I do all these things and I worry about stuff that may never happen, that's going to serve you. And then you just, you end up not very happy. Mm. And I guess that leads me to the question around how do you define success these days?
I've always defined success based on what serves me in my life at any given point in time. So when my children were young, I really wanted to focus on them. And I think I got into mortgage broking because that was the biggest thing. Somehow life pushed me as well into it. So right now, you know, my kids are 18 and 13 and they still do need me. So I try to prioritize everything around that. That's my version of success. If I'm able to go and drop my son at school when he needs me, he's in grade 12, or pick him up and can fit work around it, that's my success right now. That might change when they are finished with school and they're not at home anymore. So very important for everybody to know what their version of success is and to create that for themselves.
Absolutely. And to wrap up our conversation today, a final message for everyone listening on the politics of money mindsets.
Me being a money management specialist, everything to do with money, I will say every person needs to explore what stories are attached to money for them. Because unless they explore that, it's going to be super hard to move forward or create wealth in terms of money for themselves. So it's really important to either do it themselves or through, you know, online resources or use help wherever needed. Explore that money story, break out of it, and create that beautiful future that they so deserve.
It all sounds so positive, and I do appreciate your thoughts today. And of course, if you want to connect further with Oba, there'll be some details on the show notes. Until next time, take care. Thanks so much for listening today. If you've enjoyed the politics of everything, I thrive on your feedback. So please add a short review and share the podcast with your network through Apple, Spotify, and all the usual suspects. I'm always on the hunt for new and diverse guests, so if you or someone you know has a fresh idea you're busting to get out there, please email me at amber@amberdanes.com, and my crew will get back to you very soon.